$200,000 in new business, just to break even.
Further questions? Representative Hudson.
Yes. Could you tell us what the average income is of your tip and what the range is for the back of the house, I guess it's referred to, the non-tipped employees?
Well, I can give you statistical data on the servers. The servers, as I said, we have documentation that says they make between $9 an hour and $13.34 per hour.
Okay.
And, of course, that'll the actual income at the end of the year will vary with the number of hours they work. But that's based on their actual reported tips to us, and that's documented. With respect to the back of the house, if you're asking about wage, or I should say non-tipped employees, front
yes.
and back, the range probably is $550 on the very low side. Someone's starting out, they'll be making above minimum wage. And on the high side, they're probably making $12 an hour. Those servers are hitting the higher, are in the higher income area.
All right, thank you very much.
Next, I'd like to go to stay in Anchorage, and because of the timing on our teleconference, I want to try to finish up that, and we'd like to hear from Angela Christensen, please.
Hi, my name is Angela Christensen. I've worked in the industry before, but right now I'm a business representative for HERE, Lakeland 7-8.
Is that the, what's the name of that?
Restaurant Employee Union.
Very good, ma'am. Please give us your testimony, please.
I strongly oppose this bill. There's a reason why the federal minimum wage is higher in Alaska, because the standard of living is higher in Alaska. Even with what Fred here was saying about the higher employees, if they make $13 an hour, that being on the high side, $13.34, you just figure $13 an hour and that they work 40 hours a week, that's only $27,000 a year. That is not high income. The exception to the rule is the people that make $50,000 a year, and I'd say not even 5% of the servers in the state of Alaska make $50,000 a year. That's absurd to think that. I have two children. I'm a single mother. I've been on welfare before. My daycare bill alone for my two children is $1,194 a month. Now, you want to take $832 this year out of someone's pocket? It's unbelievable, you know. And then they go on to state that they pay Fred and Jack both on the state and say they pay all their employees above minimum wage, but now they're trying to say that they need to pay them below minimum wage because they're tipped employees. And my question would be to them, why are they not at minimum wage rate now if their costs are so high? If they can legally pay them at minimum wage, then why are they paying them above minimum wage if they're making so much in tips as they claim? Most of the servers work more than one job in this state, and they live paycheck to paycheck still. We're trying to help people get off welfare, not put them on welfare. You can't count on tips. You can't count on your paycheck, or at least you should be able to. If it's 40 cents this year, what is it going to be the years after this? I'd like to thank you for letting me speak, but please kill this bill.
Are there any questions of Ms. Christensen? Representative Ryan.
Yes. Perhaps I don't understand. How does an employee lose $800 a month?
A year. $832 a year. If you work 40 hours a week and they take 40 cents away from you, that would be $832 a year. This year alone.
Did I misunderstand on something on Mr. Amon's testimony that said nobody could get below the minimum wage?
That's correct. That's what he says. That's what the bill says.
Right. But you figure if an employee is making the minimum wage or making less than the minimum wage that the employer is paying them and their tips don't equal it, then yes, the employer has to cough up the rest of the money to make them have minimum wage. You tell me one person in this world with no kids, a single person, that can live off of minimum wage. You tell me somebody else, it's not possible. It's impossible. There's no way in the world someone can make $5.25 an hour, now this is with no kids, pay rent, pay gas, pay electricity, and if you want a phone, the luxury of a phone, pay a phone bill. If you have a vehicle, even if you don't, you're going to be paying for the people mover. There's no way in the world. It's not possible. Unless you're living with mom and dad and they're paying everything, then I suppose. above if you want.
Thank you very much, Ms. Christensen.
Thank you.
Bill Cullum, why don't you come on up here and thank you for your patience, Bill. Appreciate your coming up here. Identify yourself for the record and your affiliation, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Bill Cullinane. I own the Inn at the Waterfront, one of two owners at the Inn at the Waterfront Summit Restaurant on South Franklin here in Juneau. I think Representative Hudson and Representative Cowdery will remember a joke that goes around after every administration's over. And the first one I heard was when Hammond left. You know what you call a former Hammond administration official? Hey, waiter. So that's kind of shows you in Juneau that it's probably a little different in terms of what actually goes on compared to some of the other areas in the state. Because we have two seasons here. We have the legislative season, we have the busy tourist season. I'm in support of this legislation because it makes good economic and social sense. I mean, it simply recognizes the fact of what 43 other state legislators, and I don't know how many politicians that would add up to. It must, how could that many politicians be wrong? It makes good economic sense to the restaurant industry in this state because it's going to strengthen it. There's no doubt that it's going to come out because you can do some planning. This point hasn't been brought up. You can do a little planning in terms of what your labor costs are going to be down the road. So for that reason, I think it's actually going to generate more jobs in the industry. It's extremely competitive. As you know, many of the restaurants in this town have just recently gone down. It's very, very marginal. One of the largest percentages of your overall costs, of course, are labor. But because of that competitive nature, the way to improve it is through service. And, of course, those tips are a reflection of the kind of service that folks are receiving there. And as such, our income. I mean, it's simply recognizing what the federal government has already recognized, that is income and that should be counted. In our specific situation, we have fine dining. And a little plug here, we just recently appeared in Charles Carrault's America. He stayed with us and gave us two pages in there, so we must be good.
Well, if this is the Lions Club, we'd fine you for that.
And Kiwanis Club.
And Rotary.
But our waiters and wait people average 15, is a range I'm going to give you, because it can be very wide. I have a wait person who's just about to receive her doctorate in psychology who averages 22% year in and year out of the overall sales she has. I have people that are at 15. But generally, what does that translate into? It's 15 to 20 bucks an hour. Usually they leave, particularly during the summer, with $120 to $150 in their pockets. And of course, that you have to pay FICA, you have to pay all of the federal employment taxes on those amounts. But I think that this legislation is long overdue, and I thank those who introduced it, and look forward to its enactment. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Is there any questions of Mr. Cullinane? Thank you very much, Bill, for coming on. Next, I'd like to go back to Anchorage to make sure we still have our teleconference and hear from Teresa Perez, please.
Hi, my name is Teresa Perez, and I'm a waitress here in Anchorage. I've been here for 8 years, and I'm just not sure how I feel about this bill because I'm just not getting the answers that I really want to hear. Like, you know, this $5.25 an hour, is that going to be like forever? I mean, if the minimum wage goes up, is that going to go up? Or because, I mean, I lived in Lower 48 all my life, and I was making $2.01 an hour, and I'm just afraid that you guys are going to let this sit for $5.25 an hour, you know, for our grandkids to get for $5.25 an hour. And, you know, I'll be more than happy to give the 40 cents an hour to my boss as long as she does give that 40 cents back to the employees as benefits. I'll be more than happy to give that 40 cents to that dishwasher that's working hard, you know, or the cooks that work hard. I mean, I just want it all to be fair in the business, you know, and you know, you guys are always after us. I don't understand why the tipped employees have to be punished for making tips. I don't understand that. You know, I know it's been going on for, 200 years or something, and I don't get it, you guys. Explain it to me, can you?
The questions of Ms. Perez.
Yes?
Oh, Ms. Perez, I have a question. Do you have what's called out tipping, or do you share your tips with the other employees? I think each different restaurant has a different type of a scheme about. So you give the bus people and some other people, you share those tips with them, right?
Yes.
Right, and
it's great because they're working for me. Without them working for me, I wouldn't make my tips. So it's just one big circle, you know. But just try and be fair to us, you guys. You know, I just don't want to go back to $2.01 an hour. And I depend on my checks just like anybody else, you know. And
new prices, and we just, yeah.
You understand?
Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe by law that there's no way that you're going to be going to anything less than the minimum wage. That's been testified here. The only reason this is before us is because there's an increase on the restaurant owners throughout the state of Alaska, small and large, by virtue of the increase in the minimum wage. And what this bill tries to do is to guarantee your minimum wage, but to also to provide this offset so that we can hopefully keep more of these restaurants, small cafes and things of this nature in business, and therefore providing a job opportunity as well as a dining place in Alaska. So you don't have to worry about going back to $2 or anything of that nature. The law clearly stipulates that in Alaska we must pay the minimum wage plus 50 cents. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And so that's in the book. We're not going to, you won't see that be taken away from you.
Ms. Perez, if you don't mind, and you don't have to answer this question, but can you tell us about approximately kind of the average, how much you make an hour with your tips?
No, I'm not going to tell you that.
Okay.
But I want to say something, sir.
Yes, ma'am.
When the minimum wage goes to $5.65, then will it go up also?
Yes.
It will?
Yes.
All right. And is there any way for the employers to prove to you, like in a year, okay, if you guys pass this today, is there any way for the employers to prove to you that they have done something constructive with the 40 cents an hour that they're going to take from me for something for the whole of the restaurant to improve the working environment do you understand?
I understand the question, but I'm not sure. There's nothing in the bill that would mandate an employer to come back to you and prove. That's certainly
that's
a question.
Not necessarily should, me, but to you, because that's what you're saying with this 40 cents, that it's supposed to go back to the back of the house and help them. And I just want to make sure that these people that are working in the back of the house are
going to
get something out of it.
Well, why don't we take some more testimony? Maybe these folks will help you answer that question, because there is nothing in the bill that requires that, and that was an answer to your question. Thank you very much, Ms. Perez. That concludes our teleconference testimony. Is there anybody else on teleconference that wishes to testify? Well, thank you very much. Then we'll go back to Juno, and next we'll hear from Chris Anderson. Welcome, Mr. Anderson. Please identify yourself and your affiliation, please.
Hi, I'm Chris Anderson. I'm one of the owners of the Glacier Brew House in Anchorage. Just a comment to Bob, if you're there, I hope I am one of those a good restaurant owner now. I do have an installed insurance this year, and I have one of the finest insurance programs for my staff that's available in Anchorage. I'm very much in support of this bill. This bill, over the last year with the two increases, has cost me an increase in wages of approximately $60,000 to my staff. And they talked about the profit of restaurants. They talked about the little the different quadrants. I've been in operation for 9 months, and I haven't made it to a quadrant yet. And hopefully I'll make profit soon. This is not about making profit for me. I'm not looking at this saying, hey, I want to take this away from my staff and increase my profitability. What I want to do is maintain my benefits and ensure that the people on the lower end of my payrolls are getting compensated. I run every year 70,000 man hours of tipped employees. I need to put the relief on my non-tipped crew members, my line cooks, my dishwashers. Those are the parts of my business that need relief. It is true that my restaurant does have good sales and my servers are doing well. I'm very pleased with that, and I couldn't be happier. A server at dinner will make approximately $18 an hour. A lunch server, although, will only make $12 an hour, where a host may make $13 at dinner, may only make $11 at lunch. I'd love to see them make more money. And the way they make more money is by getting more guests in those chairs to provide more sales and keep them busy. And that happens by keeping my prices low and being competitive and having more people in those chairs eating my food. In order to do that, I have to have a staff that cooks that food that are competent and capable. I pay very good wages for my cooks, and I want to keep those wages going up. The key word there is want. Because right now I'm facing the bank. The bank says they want money, and as I said, I'm not in the profit quadrant yet, and when I take $60,000 hit in wages in my first year of operation, followed by approximately $50,000 in benefits just for insurance alone, that quadrant seems hard to find. To raise over $100,000 in increased revenue means in my business I need to raise well over $1 million in increased sales on my first year of business. Very difficult. I relish the challenge. I know I'll do it. I know I'll be there. And I know along the way I will be seen in Anchorage and in Alaska as one of the finest restaurant operators that treat my crew and staff the best.
Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How many employees are employed in your restaurants?
Full-time, about 80. Seasonal, up to about 110.
Thank you.
Representative Ryan.
How much of an increase is going to take to price yourself out of that market?
How to price myself out of that market?
How much more of an increase in wages is going to take before it puts you out of the market you're in now and moves you up to a higher market that perhaps you can't compete?
That's a tough question, because I think if the wages go up along with everyone, we all are in the same boat. If it's singly on myself, a small increase is a problem. I targeted a certain guest check average where I opened the business to position myself in that segment of the market that was between some competitors. By having to raise my guest check to cover this cost, it puts me in a segment that my guest counts decline. I work on volume. If I don't do a lot of volume, I don't make money. If you've been in the restaurant in the winter, you see it busy. That is sustained. I can not be upside down too hard in the winter, but I have to do a lot of volume in the summer.
Mr. Anderson, what is the average number of hours that your serving staff would work?
In the summertime, you know, a server may work 40 and above, so probably average between 35 and 40. Wintertime, probably between 30 and 35 for dinner, and roughly about that at lunch, maybe a little less. Lunch is a short shift.
And you mentioned that two increases were $60,000. Was there just the one increase?
The total increase that I will receive by having the wage go up 90 cents will be approximately $60,000. So if I go to the September, I'll have a $60,000 increase in my payroll.
So the first impact on the federal raise was 50 cents an hour, and you've
right.
already absorbed that, and
right.
that's the in your business and the organizations that are asking for this bill are not asking for a rollback.
Sure.
But so the 40 cents an hour is, so that's the totality of it all would be about.
That's it.
And did you say how much business, extra business you'd have to do?
Well, to make up $30,000, it's a in the $700,000-$800,000 level.
Which percent of your gross income now? How much would that be? How much of an increase in your business gross would you have to do?
Considerable. It would be considerable.
Like 10, 15 range?
Right now, I'm doing my first year around $4 million in sales. So I'd have to increase my volume by 25% to cover
that. Not profitable.
Well, the first year of business, you have a lot of costs that you don't have in your second year.
Well, right. So you'd have to make a substantial increase in your gross revenue.
Right.
Just to cover this 40-cent increase that we're talking about.
I will ultimately be very profitable 5 years from now. Right now.
Knock on wood, all things being equal, right?
Hope to heck, yeah. Otherwise, I'll be I'll be a waiter.
And could you
Mr. Anderson, and proud of it.
Can you tell the committee?
Or a commissioner.
Yeah. Can you tell the committee what you've had to do because of the initial 50-cent increase to change your methods or your methods of operation in your business to account for that? Could you be specific on those?
The first 50-cent raise was anticipated. In my annual plan, I budgeted for it. I did nothing different. I applied every principle I know to because I'm looking at top-line sales right now. I'm a brand-new business, and I have no business in reducing benefits or costs, and I kept it going. Where I have to look now is I've been open now a year and I have a track record and I can look and see where I need to make this up. I'll have to take some preemptive action on this next $30,000 and find out where I can take that. What it will mean for me now is in the future is as I look at my wages on my annual basis for my cooks, I'll look at those guys and may not be able to apply the same kind of raise that I would have liked to apply without this $30,000 going to the front side.
Your testimony is that it would affect your back to the
It'll affect my decision making in the future.
And did you change your because of this? Would you have to change your compensation to like your hostesses or anything like that? Or?
Not at this point. I again being the first year of a non-mature business, my guide was to go in there and make and do it right, and then and make cuts as needed after my first year.
And given the nature of the market in Anchorage, can you tell the committee what an average waiter or waitress would anticipate getting in gross compensation that includes their base wage plus their tip income? What do you have any idea what an average kind of ballpark would be?
Well, a lunch server at the brew house makes approximately $12.57 an hour, where a dinner server may make up to $18. That's on average over the 12 months of our analysis so far.
Representative Ryan.
Is that reported? The base wage plus reported tips?
Right.
Is it common in the industry that there, people might not actually fess up to the...
It is our policy to request that they report 100% of their tips.
I know you make a good faith effort, but
yeah.
Is it rumored that perhaps people don't report everything they make?
I've heard that rumor, but I don't substantiate it. That's right.
I
understand.
Yeah.
Okay. President
Cotter. Yes, there was testimony earlier when I left, and maybe we've touched on it someone else, and I apologize if we have, but the restaurant across your street from you was the
Westmark.
Coffee shop or whatever, and it's saying that their people range in 20 to 30,000 a year, if I recall that, and yours, I don't know if we've had testimony or questions to what your people average range.
They do well,
and so how can the Westmark do? What do they have to do to make as much as you? I mean, is that
get a new building?
Well, different management, I understand, and everything, and. But are we comparing apples to apples, I guess?
No. I think that what we need to get back to is the minimum wage. A minimum wage earner makes, at this point, $10,900 a year. We're talking about people that are making between low-end 15, top-end 30 or $40,000. We're not talking about a minimum wage crew member. I want to compensate my upper-end people more. I will do that with menu price increases over the years. They will make a 5% increase every year. I am more concerned about my dish operator and my entry-level line cook at $8 an hour I want to make sure they continue to get insurance, they continue to get crew meals, they continue to get the other crew benefits that come on to them. Those are the people that we need to take care of. That's, you know, when we talk at $20,000 person, that is twice the minimum wage. I understand that, and I want to give them more money. But the only way I give that person more money is by putting more people in those chairs and having a great, attractive pricing and keep my business alive. Otherwise than that, that $20,000 person goes away, and I've lost it all.
And you, I suppose you attribute your success in your volume of business to your service and the quality of your...
I have a wonderful staff that opened a restaurant under very difficult situations, and I wouldn't trade one of them for anything. They're wonderful, and I hope they...
You've just been open a year or a little
Less than a year. May 20th is my anniversary.
Okay, and I suppose your turnover...
My turnover is very low.
Very low. Thank you.
Hey, Mr. Anderson. Mr. Perkins, would you like to...
Mr. Chairman, committee members, for the record, my name is Dwight Perkins. I'm the special assistant to Commissioner Tom Cashin at the Department of Labor. You've heard a lot spoke this afternoon, and for the interest of trying to keep my testimony short, there has been some statistics that have been mentioned, and I'll tell you a few statistics, too, if I may, from the department. When we saw this legislation come up, the commissioner was concerned and still is regarding this legislation. And we found that in 1995, 5,900 persons earned a majority of their wages, including reported tips for that year as waiters or waitresses. These workers earned an average from all reported sources, including other occupations, of $6,667. Now, this figure includes anyone who worked even a day as a waiter or waitress. So we don't mean to represent it as an average wage for year-round food service. To get a better number, we ran a check on all workers employed as waiters and waitresses in all four quarters in 1995 and came up with 1,500 individuals who earned an average for the year of $12,213. Of that, 75% of the 1,500 earned less than $16,139. For that year. This is also an imperfect measure, and it does not mean that individuals were employed for full time for the year round, only that they were employed as servers at some point in each of the four quarters of the year. Mr. Armin and the representative came over to the Department of Labor today, and I thank them. We met with the commissioner, deputy commissioner, and myself. And we discussed this, and you know, the Department of Labor shall foster and promote the welfare and wage earners of the state, improve their working conditions, and advance their opportunity for profitable employment. And the commissioner has a hard time understanding how this will help the wage earners of the state. We have heard a lot about the front line and the back line employees, and Ms. Perez's testimony of how she was paid $2.62 an hour in another state. And granted, there are 43 other states in the nation that do allow less than minimum wage or minimum wage to reflect it against their tips. This is a, as Mr. Armin has said, and I'm sorry if I mispronounced your name.
Armin.
Mr. Armin has stated that you know, the National Association of Restaurant, the group, this is an agenda for a national agenda to have tip credits towards the employees' wages, so that it is, you know, conformity all over the United States. I asked Mr. Armin today, you know, of the states, I thought it was just the West Coast, but it is West Coast, plus I think Minnesota, I think he said, seven states that have not allowed this. Alaska is one of them. The commissioner feels that he just can't see the benefits of this to the employees. We've always prided ourselves in Alaska, and I hear it less and less, but you know, there used to be a saying around here, we all said, we don't give a damn how they do it outside. And a lot of people are proud to say that. And I don't hear that much often anymore, nor does the commissioner. And we feel that this is just ill-advised legislation. We don't see it as helping the Alaska wage earner. And for the time, or for the interest of time, I'll leave you with one more statistic, and then I'll answer any questions. You know, since 1995, adjusted after inflation, the Alaska average monthly wage has fallen from 1985 of approximately $3,100 a month to approximately $2,700. You know, the Alaska wage earner has been taking a hit for the last 10 years and continues to. And the Department of Labor just doesn't feel why we need to race, you know, have this race to the bottom of the wage scales or to Alaska working conditions for the Alaska wage earner. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the opportunity to come before the committee today. The commissioner did want me to say hello and bring his greetings. And unfortunately, in this particular case, the department cannot support this type of legislation. Thank you for
Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dwight, if there's any benefit in this or any other leveling type of a measure, it has to be in the possibility of jobs, which in my way of thinking is one of the justifiable reasons for trying to do something like this. You know, I worked out at Vintage Business Park a bit there, and I watched first the old Sizzler go under, and then most recently the Homesteader. And the people really are not making a whole lot of money in this business, and you see more and more restaurants go up and down. So to me, if there's any merit to it, it's the fact that maybe it provides an opportunity for some private investor to put their money into an eating establishment, and with a slight bit of assistance through this kind of legislation to not have to absorb these higher nationally imposed costs, we may keep these things open, and consequently people may have a job. And I'm talking about the low-income people, because we have, you know, tons of them that are involved in this thing. I don't think, you know, that I could certainly do this, but there's a lot of people, this is the only avenue they have. So when you say you see no benefit to the thing, well, it might be a little bit of an offset or adjusting of where the money goes vis-a-vis this, as I say, this federally imposed higher cost. It could conceivably maintain thousands of jobs in the state of Alaska that may not make it. And then there will not be jobs, and these people won't even get the minimum wage then, because they'll all be on assistance somewhere. So that, to me, that, you know, when you ask, you said, I see nothing in it, I see potential of jobs, and that's the reason I was somewhat interested in it.
Thank you.
President Ryan.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not trying to be cynical about this, but a person averaging $13.20 an hour with wages and tips, that's around $27,500 a year, and that being minimal wages to get along, we are paid approximately $11.54 an hour, and for practical purposes, we hold the fate of the state in our hands, and if we manage to get along, I am not unsympathetic to labor or the people who are making a living. I don't want to see anybody do any worse than they can. But it's been demonstrated with the margins and what increased costs take in this business in additional gross revenues to just break even, that if you keep incremental costs going on, pretty soon you're going to have a whole lot of people going out of business because they can't afford to pay their overhead. I'm in business, you're in business, John's been in business, we know what overhead is, we know what costs are. I don't think you can sink the ship to save somebody. I mean, it's got to balance out. And people have to make a living, yes, but the person has to remain in business to employ these people, or then there are on welfare. If you have to make $1 million to cover 40%, 40-cent raise, with the amount of people you have working, the volume of business you're doing, it's a gross $1 million to be able to net to cover that raise. I would love to gross $1 million in my business. I'd guarantee I keep an awful lot more than those guys can, if that's okay. I don't know. I don't find the arguments persuasive enough.
through the chair, just a brief response, if I may. And it's, you, Representative Ryan, this is, it is, this truly is a difficult issue to think about. And I know that you're not out to put this on the backs of the working men and women of Alaska. You know, one of the analogies that I've heard is, you know, we're all in this thing together. It's just like the private sector employers, you know, they should be helping, they should be supporting the public sector raises, because if they don't get a raise, they're not going to have those that much expendable income, and those $2 drinks on the bar are going to be sitting there for, or $3 drinks on the bar are going to be sitting there for a while too. And in the restaurant, and in the restaurant industry, there isn't going to be as much disposable income to go out for dinner, you know. So we're all, you know, one feeds the other. One doesn't get a raise, they don't have that expendable income to go to the restaurant industry. That industry can't afford to keep employees. A federally mandated minimum wage increase, as Representative Hudson has been done, and it's just an industry that is, in our opinion, is well, I don't mean this harshly, but wants to take care of it on a state issue, state level, and not pay that increase and have it credited towards the tip instead. And it's just we feel a bad piece of legislation at this time.
Mr. Perkins, though, is the department against this bill, or?
Yes, we are. And I think I've already said that once, Representative Roper.
Okay. And point of fact, just a couple of quick questions here. We have one more witness here. I'd like to get that in.
Sure.
And then I'll go to Representative Sanders, too. This bill speaks to a federally mandated and associated raise of by my calculation, in October 1st of 96, it afforded a 10.5% increase to minimum wage earners in the state of Alaska. And then that's the 50 cents.
Sure. Yeah.
And then this September 1st of this calendar year, the federal law and the concurrent state law would mandate an additional 40 cent increase, or 7.6% more or less increase, or therefore almost a 18% increase in a period of less than 11 months. I mean, that sounds like a pretty substantial increase for a non-bargain for wage increase, particularly to the people we're talking about. Now, there's a lot of reasons for this, mm-hmm. and this was based on a national debate and the mandate of Congress, so I understand that. Can you tell me what the federal intent is in having a minimum wage?
To try to make people at a threshold so they can make a living, Representative Ryan.
Representative Roper.
But nobody in the state of Alaska, and we've heard testimony of this, and nobody's affected by this bill, really does make a minimum wage.
Well, the tip credit, if you, Representative Roper, the tip credit, as I understand it, will be to the employer. We feel that, you know, what it does is that the employee ends up having to pay for that. The commissioner mentioned that today to the representatives down at the office. You know, we are opposed to this type of legislation. In this particular, we oppose the legislation, and you know, we're on the record for that. And the committee will do how they feel will best affect the state. And
thank you, Representative Sanders. You have a question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a quiz. I hope Bob Gill's still on the line. I'm not sure.
I don't know if we're still on the line.
It was my understanding that Bob Gill said that the way this bill's written would preempt any negotiations under collective bargaining, that this would come ahead of that they couldn't negotiate.
Well, good question. Thank you for answering that. I was going to ask the same thing.
Through the chair, Representative Sanders, the way I read this bill, there is no provision for collective bargaining agreements. So whatever, basically, the employer would have his right or her right to, this is the law, and I don't know if Mr. Gill's online, he may be able to address that better than I, but.
Could you answer that for us, Mr. Gill?
This is Fred Rosenberg in Anchorage. Mr. Gill did leave. So he's not available to respond to that.
Thank you.
But I have a comment on it, just that it appears that the most restrictive regulation requirement that you're under is the one that prevails, much like the state minimum law, minimum wage law, is more restrictive or higher than the federal. And we're obligated to maintain that.
Well, and Mr. Perkins, I would say that it's my reading of the statute and my understanding of the Supremacy Clause and so forth of the United States Constitution that there is nothing in this particular bill which would have any impact on the right of a collective bargaining unit to bargain for or whatever wage level they would have. Therefore, there's no need to speak to that by exempting collective bargaining here. So that, for the record, is not the committee's intent to in any way restrict a collective bargaining unit and anybody related to labor relations from having their own wage scale or anything of that nature.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, as I'm trying to think this through as we're talking, but this would be the baseline figure, if you will. The alternative is if the collective bargaining agreements, and I'm thinking out loud here, so I'm not speaking on their behalf, but I'm thinking that if the collective bargaining agreements don't agree with this, the employer certainly can just say, well, then I'll go non-union and, at the end of the contract if they don't want to renegotiate. So, I mean, that's my understanding or my thought process on it.
Right, it doesn't restrict them from offering a higher wage scale. As we heard the testimony, there are higher wage scales except if they do agree with that. So, Representative Ryan.
Well, we follow the basic standard of English common law versus the Neapolitan Code. Under the Neapolitan Code, unless something is expressly permitted, it's forbidden. Under English common law, everything is permitted unless it's expressly forbidden. So where in this legislation does it say anything about somebody who couldn't collectively bargain? I mean, I don't see the argument there.
That's the opinion of the committee. The committee of the chair. I mean, let me put that more delicately here. I can't speak for my colleagues. So I presume to. Representative Bryce.
Thank you. Maybe a quick question to the department. We've had some discussion in the backup about the 40-cent number, that kind of thing. Where in the bill or where in statute would it prohibit, say, an employer to provide a cash wage of zero with the tip credit being $5.25?
I believe, if I may, through the chair, Representative Bryce. Mm-hmm. The way we read this is in on page 2, line 2, subsection D, starting there. An employer must pay a tipped employee minimum wage of at least $5.25.
And I understand that. Maybe I'm not being clear. No. Say you're a tipped employee, mm-hmm. and you're bringing in $10 a tip an hour, as averaged out. What's to say that? What's to keep the employer from basically, as they do in New Jersey, having a zero cash wage? And then using the tip credit for the entire wage.
Mr. Chairman, can I try to respond? Tom, can I? I think if you look right at the first page of the bill, it very clearly states that the employer shall pay each employee wages at a rate of not less than 50 cents an hour, greater than the prevailing federal minimum wage law, which is established by federal law. And the only thing this...
With the exception, Representative Hudson, of B and D prior to that clause. That's why we have the D clause.
So, Mr. Chairman, I'm the chairman. It says on page 2, right, it says the employer must pay a tip employee of at least 25 cents an hour.
That's right, and that's what I'm saying. The tip credit can be the $5.25.
No. That's a minimum
it's
the wage.
Wages. And
that's a floor, is what it does.
Well, that brings up a question.
Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. at least $5.25 an hour. Is that the federal minimum wage? What is that?
That's
it's
50
currently
above.
Until September
1. Okay. Federal minimum wage raises, this won't go up?
That in September, when there's an additional 40 cents, that this bill will
okay.
excludes
okay.
that provision from the Alaska statute, because the federal minimum wage is $4.75 an hour, and it goes up to $5.15 an hour.
And we're 50 cents above the national.
And we're above that. So we're okay. above okay. the federal okay. minimum wage.
By state law.
By state law.
What happens when it goes to $7.50? Is this still going to be $5.25?
Yes.
Yes.
When did it go to $7.50?
Mr. Parker, do you have a comment on that? If you want to come up to the table, please, to help us clarify this issue here. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is Kyle Parker. I'm working with the folks in the restaurant industry on this legislation. Through the chair, Representative Sanders, the way this legislation will work, when in the future the minimum wage goes up to $7 an hour, the cash portion of the wage paid to a tipped employee by his employer will be $5.25. However, that does not relieve the tipped employee's employer from the obligation of making up whatever difference there might be between $5.25 and $7. So if the employee is not earning enough in tips to make up that differential, the employer will be making up that differential.
On a daily basis.
On a daily basis, correct.
Yeah, but if he does, that means he don't get a raise. If he's making $5.25 now and
he's paying for
$2 in tips, he's making $7.25. Yeah. And if the minimum wage goes to $7.50, he's only going to be making seven.
But he's getting reduced.
Through the chair, Representative Sanders, you're absolutely correct that they will not. Wage as it goes up another 40 cents, they will not receive that from their employer. However, as I said before, the employer is not relieved from his obligation to ensure that the employee is earning at least $5.65 an hour when our state wage goes to $5.65 in September.
I just want to put one thing on the record. This, in the long run, this is going to turn around and bite you, because once you're paying $7 and then the minimum wage is $7.50 or $9, and these people aren't making above the minimum wage like they are now, they're not going to work here anymore. You're going to have a real poor class of employee working in your restaurant.
Through the chair, Representative Sanders, I would offer that if in the future the minimum wage in this state ever does get to $7 an hour, it would not, I would imagine that we would be revisiting this tip credit. The other states that have enacted this tip credit legislation, as minimum wage increases have gone up, they have looked at their tip credits to determine whether they're still appropriate. So if at some point in the future our state's minimum wage does go to $7 an hour, I would suggest that it would probably, we would be looking again at this tip credit legislation.
Right,
the tips of Mr.
gentlemen, we need to be
through the chair. Just real briefly, if I may, you know, tips have never been considered part of wages. That is over and above what the people, the servers have done. They deserve those tips, and those have never been accredited towards anybody. And we just think it's quite a departure of what we know in Alaska. In Alaska, wage earners of this state, and it's just kind of offensive.
Mr. Perkins, do you the employers that have tip employees have to pay FICA taxes and everything else on those wages? So
yes.
Why are you saying?
And you know, Mr. Chairman Roeckberg, believe it or not, I was a small business owner too in the restaurant industry, and I know all about it. And I've washed lots of dishes too, and it's just very difficult to tell somebody that their wages are going to be, or their tips are going to be part of the wage that basically they're going to be paying for that 40 cent increase.
You have one more witness, and I'd like to get the doctor to testify, and then we'll take action. This is Johnson, please. Ms. Johnson.
My name is Trina Johnson. I have Love Mex Restaurants in Anchorage, Alaska, and I just want to say one thing, 30 seconds. If this tip credit does not pass, I will seriously be forced into thinking about canceling my health benefits for my employees. Over the years, we've had benefits from paid breaks, paid vacations, paid holidays, full health benefits, meals provided at no charge. In the last, I would say, probably 6-7 years, we have health benefits left, and that's it. I can't afford to take any more cuts. That's all I would like to say. If there's any questions.
Thank you. Representative Ryan.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I operate on the fact that TIP means an acronym to ensure prompt service. If I don't receive good service in a restaurant, I feel I don't come there to help support the restaurant owner's help. I come there to eat a good meal and to be served. If I don't serve, I feel no obligation to leave gratuity. I think that's what the term gratuity is. And if we ever get a minimum wage of $7 to $9 an hour, having been a student of history, I can say we're headed towards hyperinflation and a very good economic collapse coming very quickly. Because if the minimum wage is $7 to $9 an hour, the whole economy is in a shambles. It's not going to survive very long. I'm looking at this and I'm seeing both sides of the story, but what we're trying, if we don't pass this bill, I think what we're going to basically do is we're going to make these people who are not making a lot of money that much poorer. Because you're going to drive people out of business, you're going to force people to do what this person is told. You can't just go out and generate $500,000 to $1 million worth of new business because the federal government decides to pass a bloody law. It's impossible. If market forces are what they are, and you must stay competitive and you must move volume.
Are there further questions of Ms. Johnson? Well, Ms. Johnson, you did provide a chart for the committee, and it does show that I would put this on the record that your back of the house people would have basically a flat level of compensation as the minimum wage would go up.
Is that correct?
So this minimum wage increase has had a demonstrable statistical impact on your back house employees.
It's had no effect up until it reaches a point. There is no employee in the restaurant that we pay minimum wage except tipped employees. Our dishwashers make in excess of $6 to $7 an hour. Our dishwashers, line servers, all of them, up to $10, $11, $12 an hour. The only people that are affected wage wise are the tipped employees. And inevitably, what's going to happen is, if we don't get a tip credit, this first phase of this tip of the minimum wage increase last year cost me in excess of $20,000. The second phase is going to cost me $25,000 to $30,000. In a 2-year period, that's $50,000. There's too much competition out there. Chris with the Glacier Brew House, there's a lot of places that have opened up, and I cannot sustain any increases at all. You start looking at things to cut. I cannot not replace that ice machine that needs to be replaced. I cannot not replace the tile. I've got to fix the air conditioning. The one place to look at that I have to cut is going to be the employee benefits. It's the only thing left.
So besides your real goal of surviving right now, but if you were able to increase profitability, you would be in a position to put some of those dollars and allocate them back to the employees.
Oh, I've been trying. We're trying, and everything gets tougher and tougher every year.
In answer to an earlier statement here, can anybody guarantee that the employees are going to get anything? It's hard to do that, but that's the nature of the game.
I would say see where the benefits lie in a year from now. I would love to be able to instigate back some of these benefits because, as you've heard testimony from other employers, the quality of the employee has got to be high. You cannot keep somebody at $5.25 an hour. I can't pay a dishwasher $5.25 an hour. I wouldn't be able to keep him. I've got to pay him $7.50 an hour. I've got to pay my line cooks $8 to $10 an hour. There's nowhere in town you're going to find a dishwasher working for $5.25 an hour.
Further questions, Representative Cotty?
How many? I'm from Anchorage down. How many restaurants are in Anchorage? Have you got a rough count on the number?
There's Jack.
Food establishment. Anybody have I seen a sign out on Tudor Road here some time ago that said something that's the last chance for a Chinese restaurant in a quarter of a mile or something to that effect.
I wouldn't even have a clue. A lot more than there was 10 years ago.
But I didn't say that as any kind of a slant. It was just somebody put up a sign because there was a lot of restaurants.
I'd venture to say there's probably in excess of 300 restaurants in Anchorage.
Competition is fierce.
Over 500.
I think so. I did know that, but and I think you're right. It's maybe over 500.
President Ryan, you have a quick question.
Yeah, I noticed that the testimony from, is it Mr. Bell?
Gill.
He said that his organization covers most employees in the hotels and so forth. Those restaurants and hotels not more or less captive audiences versus people will have to come to you off the street, or how does that work?
I'm not sure. I'm not real sure, but I think if you were to look at the difference between Chris's place and the Westmark across the street, the Westmark has been there for a long time. They don't have they've got their startup costs paid for. And for right now, you've got a lot more startup businesses, new businesses that are trying to open, while your old mom and pops that are still trying to survive. And so that with the new businesses trying to pay their startup costs and the older business just trying to keep at a competitive edge with everybody else, I think that's might be why there's a difference.
For the record, I would venture to say that the differential is caused by the fact that the food amenity services in some hotels are there as amenity to the guests. And they try to be profit centers, but they're not necessarily profit centers because they have a lower volume of traffic. They have to pay a higher base wage because their employees don't receive the amount of tips from a classic restaurant type situation, and that's why they pay more. For the questions, thank you very much, Ms. Johnson. The public hearing.
John Roper?
Yes.
This is Fred Rosenberg. It's not inappropriate. I wonder if I could respond to a question that Representative Ryan asked.
Fred, we got to hurry on here, so we're going to close the public testimony, but I appreciate it. And if you have a question, get it down in writing to us.
All right, I'll do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Public hearing on this 237 is now closed.
Mr. Chairman.
President Hudson.
I move House Bill number 237 out with individual recommendation and ask unanimous consent.
Object.
There's objection. Could the clerk call the...
Well, I would like to speak to my objection right quick. Quite frankly... I see this as, you know, requiring employees to pay a kickback to employers. I see tips specifically as something that I give to servers versus giving to the employer. I pay my bill. That's what I pay to the owners. My tips I give to the servers. I think what we're doing here, Mr. Chair, is inappropriate. 237 does not address the needs, I think, that have been stated by the owners, given that they don't have minimum wage employees. What this does end up doing is hitting down on the low-end folks harder than the folks who are in some of the higher or more classy establishments.
Question.
Further comments? Question. Could the secretary read the roll, please?
Representative Cowdery.
Yes.
Representative Sanders.
Yes.
Representative Bryce.
No.
Representative Ryan.
Yes.
Representative Hudson.
Yes.
Chairman Roper.
Yes. House. For the record, there is a zero fiscal note that was moved along with that. House Bill 237 has been passed out of this committee. For the folks that are here for the nursing bill, Representative Ryan, I really appreciate your staying with us. We'll stay here if we got a quorum, and I know some of the members may have to leave.
Well, Mr. Chairman, have we make a question, if I may?
Representative Ryan, sir.
Have we fairly well covered most of the concerns? We've heard nothing but glowing testimony on this bill, and it seems to be appropriate. All the professionals. Is there anybody really has anything that any objections to it? If not, I'd move we move this bill out with individual recommendations and a couple of fiscal notes.
I would like to just go back very briefly to Mrs. Reardon and
why?
know. Well, it's the issues I brought up before. You think that under that section, Mr. Reardon, that we were talking about,
uh-huh. Yes,
that
sir.
There's sufficient due process and the ability on the part of an accused certified nursing aide to have a hearing, or are you going to have to draft regulations to provide that hearing in under the statute? And then we get that bill there that was, I was referring to I got under the section 0868333, which is on page 4 of the original version, that related to that subsection E. The board shall establish procedures under which a finding under the that's the Department of Health and Social Services statute that a certified nurse's aide had committed abuse, neglect, or misapproached property and result in the revocation of certification that will be removed from the registry if the certified nurse's aide requests a hearing and can establish mistaken identity or the finding has been set aside by the reporting agency or by a court of competent jurisdiction. I mean, there's no provision in that subsection there for a hearing by the nurse's aide before the Administrative Procedures Act. And then additionally, would that section be covered by the APA or not?
Mr. Chair, I believe that F on line 16 does exempt the board from the requirement that the APA be followed.
Well, that's just for the register, I think.
Well, it says for procedures under this whole section.
No,
so
it's under that under AS 4462.330 and through 630. That's the nurse's registry, as I understand it. Mr. McWill, do you want to join us at the table real quickly here?
Mr. Chair, that 4462 is at the APA, so it's saying the APA does not apply to hearings held or procedures established under this section.
Okay, then what you're going to do? Draft new regs, right?
Mr. Chair, no, the Board of Nursing, I believe, and the division feel very comfortable following the APA, and I, in
well,
the
you
absence
just got
of
exempted from it, yeah.
Yes. however, not because we don't like to follow it. Subsection E was put in there into our original draft by the Department of Law. I thought it was very strange that it was necessary at all. And personally, I don't think it is. They came up with the idea that what if there were a case of mistaken identity and an individual was found to have, by Hess, to have been an abusive CNA. But when they sent the name to me, it wasn't really the same human being. And, oh, didn't we need to have some way to, if we did find out it wasn't the right human being, actual procedures for removing them from the abuse registry? I tried to assure them that we don't have this specific language in any of our statutes, but that if anyone ever were able to prove that they weren't really the Catherine Reardon that Hess had identified as abusive, certainly we would take them off the list without putting up any fight. We've never had this situation occur. It's never caused any problems. But for some reason, the Department of Law, when we were working on a draft, felt like they actually needed to see written down that if there were a case of mistaken identity, we would address it. So that's the whole reason for E. As you can tell, I was a little bit frustrated by the experience. But so if that case did come up where we had someone who said, I'm not really the same human being, personally, I think I would probably fall back on the APA, but really what I would first try to do is probably just capitulate and say, okay, show me you're not that person. We won't even fight it. We won't even have a hearing. We'll just go along with you and take you off the abuse registry. Why would we be wanting the wrong person to be on the abuse registry? We wouldn't.
Okay, well then if I can help myself out here, then under the procedures that are in the subsection 331, mm-hmm. which is back on page 2, line 30 of the original non-CS, because mm-hmm. that's where I've done my markup.
Uh-huh.
This provides for the administrative procedures and the fact you need to adopt regulations for the training and the uh-huh. conduct of hearings and the disciplinary action under your Title 8 075, which is a complete litany of how you act at a hearing, right? Your 075 provisions, Title 8, 01075. That's a typical APA or Title VIII disciplinary hearing.
No,
no?
Mr. Chair. Title 0801 is just our centralized licensing statutes where it says we can adopt.
Yeah, but 075 sets out some disciplinary procedures, I believe.
It says the board may take the following disciplinary actions singly or in combination. Revoke right. a license. It doesn't say how we're going to do it. It just says what punishments we may.
Okay, so you still need the regulations to do that. In other words, if somebody's going to ask for a hearing, I'm just making sure here that the person that's going to have a revocation is going to get a hearing.
Yes, Mr. Chair, by all means, before my division disciplines a licensee, the person will have a hearing. To tell you the truth, they will have an APA hearing.
Well, that's what's got me trouble. That's why you, I hope you appreciate my concerns that I'm bringing up here. I'm not trying to frustrate this.
No.
Because there's some rather strange things going on in this bill where there's exemptions from the APA. Ms. McWill, you can help us here.
Well, Chairman, those strange things relate specifically to those individuals who are currently, quote-unquote, regulated by Health and Social Services who work in a long-term care facility or a home health aid.
Right, where they can have their administrative hearing under the department's procedures, but they can also request a revocation through the through Ms. Reardon's department. So I understand that. But here we're talking about the revocation and other future further suspensions here and the hearing process in case that happens.
Mr. Chair.
Right, if they're not under the other one.
Mr.
Right.
Chair, correct. I have no desire for the Division of Occupational Licensing or the Board of Nursing to be exempted from the APA. The Department of Health and Social Services has a desire to be exempted from the APA. In trying to accommodate their desire to be out from the APA, this type of language went in. So all I care about for the Division of Occupational Licensing is page 3, line 30. And as long as that's in there, I believe I'm taken care of not to have to have a second hearing.
I'm concerned. I want to go back to my position here. Where is there here in the bill that provides for the due process if somebody's being disciplined? That's what I'm concerned about.
Mr. Chair, it says we're exempt from the APA, but it doesn't say we're exempt from the constitutional obligation to give due process. And so when I ask the Department of Law attorney who stepped in here a minute ago during the previous bill, if you didn't want to follow the APA, what would you have to do? And she told me you would have to set up a whole nother procedure that still complied with constitutional mandates for due process. You couldn't just summarily punish people without any recourse. You'd have to set up an alternative that was just as good. I personally don't want to have to think of one. So I would probably stick with the APA, but Hess seems to have an interest in thinking of another alternative that would also provide due process and put it in their regulations.
So they're going to have to, if this bill passes, they're going to have to come up with another procedure.
Or right? I suppose, Mr. Chair, that they could just say, even though we don't have to follow the APA, we choose the APA as our procedure. When they find out that it's very hard to think of your own, they may fall back on that. It doesn't say you may not use the APA. It says you don't have to. So I suspect they may just
okay,
fall
but
back.
I'm concerned about your responsibilities the way this is done, that you're going to have to do regulations, and you're suggesting you'll probably adopt the APA.
That would be my goal, yeah.
Jesus. Okay. One other, couple of little other things. On page 2, and I'm looking at the original version again. On the bottom of page 2, line 31, there's the word may issue certification. Rather than why is may versus shall there, is anybody going to speak?
Mr. Chair, that's an easier question, so I like that one. I did actually have the opportunity to ask an attorney about that who said it's discretionary. If you'd prefer to have it say shall, that's fine too.
Ms. McWill, you got any problems with the name? Oh, and then one other thing I had was the, and this Ms. Reardon, on page 4, the notice provisions here, it says the notice is considered when delivered personally to a nurse's aide or deposited in the United States mail, address the nurse's aide, the last known mailing address on file with the board. That's the APA definition.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure if it's the APA requirement.
But that's the one we'd like to follow. If you'd like it to be a certified letter, that would be fine also. Our problem is at times in statute it'll say received, that the notice has to be received,
right.
And we have difficulties because people move and avoid the mail, and then we can never actually discipline them. So if you feel more comfortable with a certified letter, that would be fine.
I would like to see something with a return receipt requested or something. I guess, couldn't you have a special delivery letter? It has to be certified? Or
Mr. Chair, the only problem with return receipt is that difficulty that people move and don't tell us, so the return receipt comes back, it wasn't received. Then we can't actually add them to the abuse registry until we find them around the country. And we have actually had this difficulty where it has prolonged.
Okay, you convinced me.
That,
I think we should have certified mail, right?
That would be fine.
Does anybody, Representative Ryan, what do you got? Any problem with that? Or?
If that other paragraph that the AG put in there bothers you, I'd move to.
Well, no, I think there's a reason for it. I just wanted to make sure it was fit with everything else in here procedurally, is all. You know, I just added further confusion. I think that if we could have, I'd move a conceptual amendment on, let me sure I got the right page here on the CF version.
Four, line two.
Where are we? Okay. Page four, line two. That we add the pause in the United States. Well, conceptually, they add certified mail there and let the drafter figure it out. Are there any objections to the conceptual amendment number two? Hearing none, so moved. The further questions on this bill is, I guess. You can trust to luck here. I don't know. It's my conference room. Representative Ryan, are you satisfied with the way this bill is situated now and the questions that the committee brought in?
Yes. Yes, Mr. Chairman. If you're ready to move this, I open my previous motion.
Well, all due respect to Ms. Shears, Kadri, and Hudson, who are respectful enough of this committee to remain here this long, and I want to thank you personally. This committee would entertain a motion to move this legislation.
Yes, I already made one.
Oh, that being done, I didn't. Could you restate your motion with the as amended?
Yes, I would move House Bill 217 as amended from the Labor and Commerce Committee with the accompanying fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Any objections? Hearing none, so moved.
Thank you very much.
Don't run away.
Oh, that's right, yeah. I just told her to get them out here quick.
This meeting of the Labor and Commerce Committee is adjourned at 6:06.